is the Day Zero Update for August 6th, 2017. I'm Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Chris Logie.
And I'm Dan Revictoria.
And before we get started, I want to give a quick thank you to Sid Alpha for joining us last week. Turned out to be a very good show.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, that was a great show.
The rooster agrees. Yes, the rooster agrees. Got some very good feedback from that show, and as a result, I think we're probably going to be changing the format up a little bit to try to skew the show more towards more discussion-y type topics.
Works out really well because that was kind of my original vision for the show to begin with, so it's more of a correction than anything.
Yeah, it just kind of showed us what we were good at, so yeah, I think we're going to try to make that happen in the future. So kind of slotted the lineup with more discussion-y type topics up at the top, and if we run out of time for the news bits, well, we could probably do a separate show with those. Yep. So, we're going to be working on that, and format changes will be happening. We might do, two Day Zero updates a week, maybe a discussion, and then maybe a news, or maybe just not call it Day Zero update, we don't know. It's all to be determined, and it will happen in the not-too-distant future, so... Yeah,
probably just SmashPad Weekly News or something.
Yeah, the SmashPad Weekly News podcast, which says exactly what it is. So, yeah. Good for SEO. So, anyway. But, yeah, before we get into that, what else? I should probably mention, a day after we had Sid on the podcast, he moderated his YouTube comments. So that happened. He apparently realized that his comments had turned into a dumpster fire. So it was time to do something about it. And he also realized that freedom of expression does not guarantee you a platform.
Yeah, you don't owe anyone a platform.
Yeah. So he put up a video explaining all of that, explaining what's going on. I recommend you check it out. If you're an actual intelligent person who wants to engage in intelligent discourse, you shouldn't have a problem. If you're a hate monger, well, yeah, good luck to you. So, yeah.
Just like it should be.
Yeah. That's how that's supposed to work anyway. But anyways. So, we've been playing some stuff this week. It's been a whole lot of Pyre. I gotta say, the characters in this game are actually quite endearing, at least some of them. I really like, for his impishness there, Tizo is actually kind of fun. He just hops around and he's got reasons to be there, so he's kind of fun. There's a lot of other different types of characters. Headwind, he's always the optimist, so... But yeah, he's... A lot of good stuff there, but what I'm finding is that the outside game stuff tends to take a lot more time than you really think it should.
Yeah.
It's like you do a whole lot of reading and then just tinkering with talismans and setting up your lineups, collecting items to sell and all that stuff that you got to do. And then you go into a match and it's over in 5 minutes and then you have to do all that over again. So...
Penny Arcade kind of got on him about that, too.
Yeah. I get what they're trying to do, but maybe these two elements didn't quite gel as well as they should have. But, no, I'm not going to complain, because they added a versus mode, so you can just play that, and that's equally fun. And you can also play as characters that you normally wouldn't be able to, so that's pretty fun, too. But I don't really have too many complaints about Pyre. It's a good game. It's definitely unique. It's got a few flaws here and there, the least of which is the console interface, which makes no goddamn sense. Why do you have a pointer on a console game? I just want to know. Just snapping to the hot zones would have been much easier. But, yeah, those are the kind of things that I end up looking at because, moving a pointer around and having a visual impairment where you can lose the pointer is really, really irritating for me.
Ugh.
So, yeah, there's that. And then there's also that goddamn parchment-colored dialogue box, which always irritates the shit out of me. But I tolerate it because the gameplay is just so goddamn good. Yeah. So that's Pyre. A little bit. I'll be playing more of that and hopefully finishing it in the next couple of days. I know, Chris, you already did.
So, yep.
Yeah. So how about you, Pat?
Mostly a by-the-numbers kind of week for me. Lots of Tekken 7, Stormblood. I've been getting into Ultra Street Fighter 2 a little more to, at least to some degree, to my chagrin. I'm trying to figure out whether Ultra Street Fighter 2 is a serious attempt to revitalize SF2, or if it's a parody of it. And I, for the life of me, I cannot tell which. Hmm. So, more time with that is definitely needed. Been getting more into Smite because of friends of mine that stream it and have been getting me into it. Never actually thought I would play a MOBA, but damn if this one hasn't got me.
Hmm.
I still suck, but I think I've improved a lot in the last week at the same time, so we'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah.
Slowly expanding my roster of available gods to play as, so that's been fun. Still trying to get to Pyre. I want to be in like the perfect mindset when I start that game because just I know how into it I'm going to get.
Yeah.
And I don't want to start it up when I'm, you know, internally I'm rolling over possible new king combos that I might be able to throw down in Tekken 7 or something like that.
Hmm.
And so trying to clear my head to get started on that. And I feel bad because it was a gift, but it's definitely something that I want to approach correctly.
Yeah, you've really got to be in the right mindset because that game is going to mess with your head.
Okay.
Not the, you know, not in the mind fuck type of thing, but in the, it's going to play with your emotions. So.
Okay. Yeah. And here I just thought it was going to be one of those games that I definitely want to put all of my focus in strategically or something.
No, so. Once you get onto the field, there's definitely that. But outside of it, you're gonna fall in love with some of these characters, and you're gonna have to make some very tough choices.
Okay. Not the kind of game I thought it was, but I'm excited.
Yeah,
for sure.
So, yeah. So that Tekken 7, and pretty much it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
For this
no
week, sure. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, of course, there was also some Final Fantasy 14 here and there.
Yeah. Not as much as I would have liked, but that's something that will always be part of my gaming for the foreseeable.
Yeah, definitely.
That's been my week.
Yep. How about you, Chris?
Like you said, I've been playing more Pyre. Finally beat it. And the one bad part of it is the performance just took a shit in the final right match. I took a capture on the PS4, so I'll probably put it up so I can at least share it with Supergiant so they can see what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I still won, but yeah, it wasn't a fun kind of win.
Yeah.
When it's like, every time the ball dropped, the frame rate just dropped.
Mm.
So like trying to get that initial first move was a little bit harder than it should have been.
Yeah.
But otherwise, really enjoyed it. Had a lot of fun playing it. And I do want to try and start up another save with it and try out the hard mode and see what it's like to actually lose in that.
Because
I never really lost. I restarted like 2 times. Just because I was getting used to new people.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to have to lose a match just because I'm not used to certain people yet.
Yeah.
Well,
when you lose, you still get experience. It's just the game keeps going.
Yeah, I just restarted it.
Yeah.
And,
you Fire Emblemed it.
Yeah.
Sort of. Along with that, I played the new Patapon remastered on PS4. Mm. And immediately, all these memories just started flooding back because it's essentially the same game, just remastered. So the music just came flooding back. The joy of actually nailing the different combos, and just remembering some of the different mechanics that are in it for out of the actual rhythm parts of it. There's like a fun moment where you can, I forget what it's called, but you essentially give this guy something and he will start playing music for this tree. And as you dance, you do it well, he drops like little resources, materials and such for you. But it's like the secret best part of that game. Because it's just a fun little mini game, but good music, and it's just kind of a quick little thing that's fun. I definitely want to play more of it. And it's interesting just listening to some of the gibberish talk in there and remembering like the weird ways I remembered how they said things. It's like, oh, just trying to turn this gibberish into actual English. Just the way it sounds, but it still kind of sounds like they didn't remaster the audio that much.
Yeah.
So it sounds a little bit tinny, like a PSP.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit weird, but otherwise it's pretty much all good. Hmm. I got into the Path of Exile beta on Xbox One.
Yeah.
And it's not good.
I got into it too. Okay. And, I couldn't connect.
It's really rough.
Yeah.
I eventually solved my connection problems. I was trying to get in with the character and it just crashed a dashboard.
Hmm.
I deleted that character and started a new one and everything seemed to be okay after that.
Hmm.
Luckily that character fought one enemy in that game, so
it's not a huge loss.
Not much stakes. The inventory is bad. Hmm. It just has a bunch of squares, doesn't tell you what they're for.
Oh.
That's... So when I'm looking through like stuff I've got, like loot I've picked up or shops, trying to figure out if there's something I could buy to fill in those spots, I have no idea what goes where. So it's sort of that thing where you have to wait for it to just auto-equip the first time you find something.
Yeah.
And then you can go from there. It's like, okay, well, I don't know if any of these things fit into these other spots. So it's like, that's a big issue. You can't highlight them and have it tell you what it is either. That's... It just highlights the square, so it's really stupid.
Yeah, that's not good.
There's a lot of just pure presentation, sort of tutorial stuff they don't do. That's coming off of Diablo 3 and Marvel Heroes Omega, it really stands out.
Because
those two games do a really good job of making it easy to understand, you know, what all items you can get,
yeah,
how you can use them and all that stuff. They also have like a neat like gem mechanic, sort of the way that Diablo does, except you don't have to play through like half the campaign or something to unlock the guy.
Yeah.
So you can do that. You do it right away and you can easily just take it back out and all that sort of stuff.
Hmm.
Though it gets a bit hard trying to figure out where you're going to put it. It's a lot of just presentation, not really knowing where you're going to equip it or which items can even use it or if it's actually a gem, some of these things.
Yeah.
It's a lot of weird stuff like that, but...
It's basically a lot of interface stuff that you need to iron out.
And it very much comes off as like a more hardcore game because Diablo 3 is very much easy for people to get into and understand.
Yeah.
They've even softened it a bit because I remember... used to have a set number of potions, that stuff like that. Now it's just infinite. Yeah. You just have to wait for the cooldown. Here, like in Diablo or Marvel Heroes, when I get full inventory, I go warp back to the HQ, whatever it is, to sell off my stuff or put anything away. Here, you kind of have to have a town portal spell thing.
Hmm.
And so there's a set amount... And, like, I'm trying to go through and get new stuff. And I run out.
So.
Yeah. And they actually take up slots like RE4 style.
Yeah.
Except you can't rotate them. So these things are just oddly shaped sometimes. And you have no real way of making them fit. So you'll just have empty spaces that you can't do anything with.
Yeah.
Unless you happen to have like the currency or gems that are just take up one slot.
Yeah.
It's like you collect way more actual items that are just huge. It definitely needs a lot of work.
Mm. That doesn't sound hardcore to me. It just sounds stupid.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of...
Sometimes people confuse the two.
Yes.
This thing's hard and obtuse, so it's hardcore and better than your baby game that makes it simple to understand everything.
I'm having fun with that baby game. I'm not having a lot of fun here.
Yeah. It's like I'm having fun. There's just a lot of annoyances and things. It's like, if you guys improve this stuff, make it better. Because it feels like they just put the PC version on console and didn't do a ton to it, but make it work with a controller.
Yeah, barely.
Yeah. So it's just a weird thing. But I hope they do get those issues ironed out before launch, since this is still just a beta.
Yeah.
I've also been playing Slime Rancher, which is the Games with Gold game for this month on Xbox One, and it's just fun and kind of in the opposite way of Path of Exile. It's like no stakes, really.
Yeah.
There are enemies. They're like evil slimes. They're kind of weird. Otherwise, it's just kind of like, oh, suck up these slimes, take them into your prison cell, push them in, feed them occasionally. They poop out gems, and you get the gems and use it to buy more stuff. And it's kind of that kind of loop.
Morbid game.
Yeah, but it's got kind of a Dragon Quest slime kind of style to it.
Yeah.
They're all happy to be sucked up into your gun and shot all over the place and imprisoned. Though they will, if you put
enough... Stockholm Syndrome.
If you put them in there, put enough in the holding cell, they will kind of pile up into a corner and try to jump out.
Hmm.
But you can keep putting it higher. I think 3 levels you can get high on the... little cells, the holding pens, whatever they call them. What was fun is when I started this up last night, since I already had a save from the preview version, I just immediately got 11 achievements. I was like, oh, that's okay.
Mm.
I've done nothing. I've got 11 achievements now, and I'll play it tomorrow. Because that feels like I've already done a lot, even though I haven't done anything but load the game up. I ended up starting a new game, and it's fun seeing more areas in the place. Like, there were a lot of like dead ends.
Yeah.
In the preview version, even though it still feels a bit kind of rushed or unfinished a little bit, just because you go to certain things and it's just like plain text over it, like. Treasure chest locked. Like, what? I wasn't sure if it was just saying that because I needed to unlock it, or if it was just locked until I magically found some new ability or something that allowed me to unlock this thing.
Yeah,
it's like weird things like that. But for the most part, it's pretty well done, and I'm looking forward to playing more of that too. That's a good like time waster game.
Yeah.
Because I got to build a farm, and I got to put some auto-feeding thing on the cell so that they don't
die.
Well, they don't die.
They like food.
They don't need food to survive, I don't think. You just feed them, and they poop out the gems. That's so you can just put a bunch of carrots or berries or whatever into it, and... it'll poop them out periodically so they eat them and all that. And you work towards like expanding to other areas where there's other things. other places to get new slimes and all that stuff. So it's a game that kind of has a bit of like Harvest Moon and a little bit of Animal Crossing to it and all that, which is a good game that we don't really see too much of those sorts of games on, at least the HD consoles.
Yeah.
And especially not on Wii U, because there's no Animal Crossing there either.
Yeah. There's not much of anything on Wii U these days.
So. Yep, that's been pretty much it.
All right. What about you, Dan Reb?
Yeah, for me, I mean, I haven't been doing that much gaming, though I have made some time. I've mainly been just trying to relax after my convention circuit for most of July. So I've been sleeping earlier, things like that. Yeah, been a little busy. But yeah, again, I have found some time to game a little here and there. Played some Overwatch this week, tried Doomfist out, otherwise known as Black Ken, because of his non-spinning Shoryuken. But yeah, it's pretty cool. Overwatch is Overwatch. I also played through Gone Home. I've had it in my PSN library ever since it was free on June, and I haven't gotten a chance to play it until now. It's interesting, but I don't really understand why it got all this Game of the Year buzz in 2013. It wouldn't have made my list, but its style of storytelling was something really interesting. I'm just not really all that into games where you really have to examine artifacts to solve puzzles. Like, I think about that, like, when playing Metroid Prime, scanning all those things, I didn't really care for that. So this was basically what that was. And then I was like, it's a short game, so let's see if I can get a platinum trophy for it. But it doesn't have a platinum trophy, so I didn't really care. Next up on my list is Rockwind. I downloaded this on Steam earlier in the year. It's gotten some pretty cool buzz compared to a lot of sleeper hits like To the Moon. And I definitely understand the appeal here. It's really casual Japanese RPG-ish, but there really isn't much action. It's mostly text-based. It's about a kid who's in the hospital. He's definitely sick, but I don't know what's wrong with him yet. And his mom reads this storybook to him, and they can go into this world and check things out. And then they also connect with different patients in the hospital. So it's looking to be rather interesting. I'm guessing it'll be really profound towards the end, but I don't know yet. I hear it's about a 7-hour game. I'm about 1 hour through. I've also been playing Kingdom Hearts. I am giving this series one last chance to sort of capture me for his work, but Kingdom Hearts isn't a game that's really resonated with me, mainly because I think they can do a whole lot more with Disney's worlds, and a lot of them just seem uninspired. After seeing the Kingdom Hearts 3 trailer at D23, it really made me want to like it, so I'm giving it one more shot. I'm about 3 hours through in the first game. Nothing all that impressive, but I am further into it than I have been in the past, so we'll see where that takes me.
I'm right there with you. I really want to get into that series, but for some reason I just haven't been able to. I think it hurts in my case that I didn't grow up on Disney. So these IPs don't really mean to me what, you know, the average player probably might feel about them. So I just don't know if that's a minor setback or if that's going to be something that really comes between me and any enjoyment of Kingdom Hearts.
And that's really interesting because, again, like, this will probably resonate the most with people who were fans of Disney. At the same time, like, you know, I've seen people who have dedicated hours and hours into this game, and they love Disney. I love Disney as much as they do, but I can't put that same time in. Playing the first game, like, I've reached a point where I've been to the first two worlds already, and those were Wonderland from Alice in Wonderland and Olympus from Hercules. Both of those movies sucked, in my opinion. So I'm like, why does this have the attention that it does? But again, I don't know. We'll see as I continue to progress, if I do. And Pyre is
on that.
Oh yeah, we'll do. Pyre is on my eventually get to list. It's just that, you know, this year has been so stacked as far as games go. I don't know how long Pyre is, Chris. How long would you say it is?
I would estimate around 15 hours.
Okay, that's
it's a pretty long game.
Okay, gotcha. Well, at least it's not Persona or Horizon, so that's one thing going for it. But yeah, I'll eventually get to it. I haven't bought it yet, mainly because it's normally like, what, $12 when the holiday season comes? So we'll see. But yeah, I want to support Supergiant Games, so that's the thing with that. And I don't know, I just don't want it to fall down the way in like, I don't know, Nier Automata and Neo did. Like, I don't have those games yet. There are plenty of games that came out that I don't have yet, and I just want to wait for sales because it's getting pretty expensive. I was also a victim of credit card fraud the other day, so I need to be more careful.
Yeah,
it's not fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, as for what I'm playing, that's virtually been it.
Yeah, like you said, the reason that you haven't been playing a heck of a lot is because you've been really busy with the conventions for the past 3 weeks. So it started like 3 weeks or so ago at the D23 Expo. What stood out over there? What was going on?
All right, so the D23 Expo, for those who aren't familiar with it, it's Expo / con for the biggest of Disney fans called the Disney 23. The Disney 23 is Disney's official fan club. And the thing with this particular convention is that it's only held once every 2 years, this year being the first time that both Marvel and Star Wars got involved with the show. So as you'd expect with that, even more crowds started to really bunch this thing up. If you've been to front of the line, or at least to a better part of the line at a certain time, the same thing happened here with their own fast pass system. Like, you actually had to get in line to get a ticket to go to get in line at a store for a certain time, and I was like, cool, there isn't that much stuff I want to buy anyway. But the convention is really different, mainly because of all the Disney cosplay, which you don't really see at things like Comic-Con or anything else like that. I mean, even in Disneyland, if you're over the age of 14, you actually are not allowed to dress like a certain character, because you'll confuse children and things like that. So seeing all the Disney cosplay was actually pretty cool. The main reason why I went there was because I wanted to check out their video game showcase. I did not expect to get in, mainly because it took like almost 2 hours to actually get into the convention itself due to the line just wrapping around the expo like 3 times. It's fucking annoying, but we actually got in pretty quickly. And then I got my fast pass to go to the games thing, and it was pretty cool. They started off with Battlefront. And interesting stuff about Battlefront too. The people on stage, I guess, were like known streamers, and they were like, okay, cool. Just to talk about the campaign a little more, we want to bring in our friend John. And it ended up being John Boyega from The Force Awakens, you know, Finn from Star Wars now. And he received a pretty good pop, but if this were San Diego Comic-Con, I'm pretty sure it would be a whole lot more loud in that building. After that, they showed some Spider-Man, and the footage they showed, I would say, was actually better than what they had at E3. Like, you didn't see too many QTEs. You didn't see too many mini menus going on in the screen. It was just straight up gameplay and trailer, and it was pretty solid.
See from a Spider-Man game.
Exactly. Especially after, you know, playing through a game like Breath of the Wild, where climbing is, you know, above all, this is something you really want to see in Spider-Man, and we did get to see it. We get to see him fight Fisk, and it was pretty awesome.
Did you get a sense of the size of the city, or is that still a little?
No, it's still like random buildings. As far as we know, they might be just force web swinging action. I don't know how much you can actually explore, so we'll see with that, I suppose. And then the last big thing, of course, was Kingdom Hearts. That had roarous applause. It was totally insane. As soon as they showed the Pixar ball from Toy Story, it was over. People were going absolutely nuts. And then at the end of the trailer, when they showed the coming 2018, I was like, yeah, sure. In my
whatever you say, guys.
Believe that when we see it.
Whatever you say, guys. People were like, oh, yeah,
just
finally.
Just to be clear, Nomura's still working on this, right?
Yeah, Nomura was actually there. Pretty excited about it. And I was like, oh, it's that guy who ruined Final Fantasy.
I just hope he didn't listen to this podcast.
Yeah. But the game does look good from what I saw. And, you know, it was actually what wanted me to play the original series. And, well, to be completely honest, the reason why I even have these games on PS4 was because I took advantage of Amazon's fuck up on Prime Day. Like, I ended up getting 20% off these games like 4 times. So I ended up getting 1.5 plus 2.5 and 2.8 for a total of like $23. So it's like, why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
So
I'd jump on it for that price.
Totally. That's how many games? I had like 8. So I was like, sure. I'll probably never beat them all, but I'll get some good gameplay in. But yeah.
If you do like them, you're set.
Exactly, right? So there's that. So yeah, D23 was solid. It'll come back again 2 years from now. So I'll definitely go back. The problem was, you know, that was that weekend, and then a few days later was Comic-Con, so we had to make the drive to San Diego, and it was pretty different this year. With Comic-Cons, I typically like to focus on getting my hands on whatever exclusives I can. You know, whether that be toys or other collectibles. But this year, there wasn't too many stuff I was actually interested in. So I ended up playing most of the con by ear, focused on going to the panels I wanted to go into. And with that, I actually got into Conan. So the first night, which was preview night, I was staying with a friend and a bunch of other friends at a hotel. And there was like 7 people in there, and it was totally uncomfortable. Not to mention they're all semi-known cosplayers, so they have a lot of equipment that I didn't want to touch. So I ended up just sleeping for about 2 hours before deciding to leave at around 4 a.m. to stand in line for standby Conan tickets, which we received wristbands for to be number 96 and number 97 allowed in the theater. And when we went back, they only took the first 30, so we missed out on that. However, there was one guy there just selling tickets for about $40 each because he had an appointment with Funko to go to, and I decided to take a chance. He might scam the fuck out of me, but let's see. But they ended up being real tickets. It was cool. Yeah, we did pay for something that's usually free, but at the end of the day, they give you a Funko Pop that resells for like $150, so why not? So I went to 2 of those. That was cool. And one thing that I really wanted to do was I wanted to go to this Life is Strange panel where they'd play some of the new game. And unfortunately, I did not get to do that because I was in Hall H for the Defenders panel, which ended up being awesome because they actually showed the pilot episode. And yeah, the Defenders is a good show, at least from what I saw of the first episode. And I was a little bit concerned going in because I haven't finished Luke Cage and I didn't start Iron Fist, and I don't know if I want to start Iron Fist after hearing all the shit about it. So I was like, okay, I hope I understand what's going on. There were some Iron Fist scenes in the Defenders itself, but it didn't seem like anything was out of place, so I was fine there. And the choreography from what little fights they had with that first episode was actually pretty solid, so I'm like, okay, I don't know if I still want to watch Iron Fist, but they also announced a season 2. So I'm like, we'll see. We'll see Netflix. But yeah. And the thing with Comic-Con is that because there's so many things to do, you forget to eat.
Okay.
You know, I stayed in the convention center pretty much the entire time because I didn't want to deal with San Diego's heat. Granted, it was actually one of the cooler Comic-Cons as far as weather goes, but you know, you really don't want to be outside all that much when you have the AC blasting inside. That said, when I did go outside, it was to go to the hotel next door because that's where Nintendo's event was. And, oh boy, Nintendo's event was totally insane. My problem with it last year was that the only games they had to play were Splatoon and a whole bunch of games that were already out. My main criticism was the fact that they didn't have too many games that were, not out yet. This year, that was totally different. They had Splatoon 2, granted, which was coming out that Friday, but, you know, it still counts. And then there was a bunch of 3DS games, including Miitopia, Hey Pikmin, as well as, what's that, Bomberman-ish Switch game. It was, you have to, like, ground pound all these tiles to make them your color. It's kind of like a Splatoon and Barman put together, mainly because of how hectic it is, and that was actually really fun. I think it was called Flip Wars. Yeah, it's called Flip Wars. So that was solid. But the entire Nintendo thing was a total clusterfuck, because there was a line to get in that stretched through most of the lobby. And I've been to two Comic-Cons before that. Both of them had Nintendo there, and they've never had that amount of popularity before. I don't know if it's because the Switch is what it is, or because the booth was that much better, but I feel like if you really wanted to make use of that booth and get all the free stuff you could, you had to have at least, you know, spent an entire day there. And of course, with a 4-day Comic-Con pass, I wasn't going to do that, because you didn't need a pass to be there to begin with. And yeah, but you know, San Diego Comic-Con is actually Nintendo's first location for that tour. So if you want to check it out, check out their website. They're going to be all over the nation, so it's interesting stuff. Yeah. And then last but not least, was I came home for the California Extreme. It was located in the Santa Clara Convention Center, which is pretty much like 10 miles from my house, so it's an easy drive. And
you got some interesting pictures from that.
Yeah, I was totally amazed, and at the same time, I was a little bit overwhelmed. There were two rooms there. There was one huge one dedicated to like games from the 70s and 80s, and then there was a smaller room, which was pretty much the arcades that I grew up with from the 90s. So they had a whole bunch of beat-em-ups. They had the Trons, the Midway games, and stuff like that. But
probably Neo Geo, as far as the eye can see.
Oh yeah, so much Neo Geo. It was ridiculous. And yeah, I know Phil told me to go to this before, but what really pushed me over the edge was my newfound addiction for tournament cyberball. So, story to this. Over at work, we bought this huge arcade cabinet, which pretty much has emulators for a whole bunch of arcade games. One of them being tournament cyberball. And my boss's boss, who was actually good friends with the guys over at Atari who made these games, told us about tournament cyberball. And, you know, he's an older dude, so when it comes to games, like, we don't usually care about what he has to say. But that game is severely underrated. It's similar to Tecmo Bowl, except, you know, robots can die. So that's pretty solid. And as far as the game of football goes, it's a really, really good sim. You know, you have to get your blocks, you have to understand where the blitzes are coming from, you have to understand where the receivers are going to go to get open. It's a really solid game. So I actually watched a few of my coworkers take part in the tournament there, and they got their asses kicked. Like, I thought my losses were good, but no, there was one game where they were killed like 39-6, and I was excited because they were winning 6-0, and yeah, after that it was over. So yeah, we actually spent quite a bit of time in the office trying to learn those strategies, because there was one guy just pointing at different parts of the screen because he would bounce the ball over players' heads, and then you'd exploit a way to go under the shadow to catch the bounce pass and going for a touchdown. It was all these crazy things that we didn't expect to see. And that was totally awesome. But going back to the actual convention itself, again, there was more pinball than the eye could see. And I also got my hands on games that I otherwise wouldn't be able to try out in other places. One of the games I really liked was, it's coming to me, but I totally forgot what it was all of a sudden. It was this game where it's made by Kitty Park, Kitty Carnival or whatever. Like, there's this huge lever and it's two players and you actually have to bump your other player physically to have a better advantage of playing it. I don't know. I forget what it's called. I'll look for it. It was fun. And Phil, there was a game that you linked me to that I found as well.
It was iRobot.
Yeah, that game is fucking weird.
Yeah, it's very weird.
That game is totally weird. But when was that game made?
That was 82.
Yeah. As far as what it did visually in the early 80s was pretty damn impressive. That was like, it looked like Star Fox on the SNES, except a little bit better. Yeah. The polygons were actually pretty well done for its time. It's just that, again, the game was weird. But, you know, a lot of these games are just built on trying to eat your quarters, which we didn't have to do. So,
yeah
that was some solid stuff.
That's a very rare game.
There was also this one merchant who was just selling a whole bunch of retro games. And, a few of you guys saw it on my Facebook. There was some gems there. And a lot of them were new in box, and I was like, oh my god, I can't do this right now. And then I went on eBay, and I found a few cheaper, and I bought those right away. So it's like, cool. So, yeah, apparently this thing
happens. Never pay con prices if you can avoid it.
Oh, totally. But it also helps, you know, actually being able to hold the box and look at it. But,
yeah.
That's been my busy July. At the end of the month, we have Crunchyroll Expo and GameStop Expo. I don't know about GameStop yet, but we'll see if they want to pester me for a pass again. The main thing, though, is that it's at Vegas, and that's kind of tempting in its own way.
Yeah.
So,
You think you'd go to California Extreme again next year?
Oh, definitely. Especially if they have it at that venue.
It's there every year. Same place.
Yeah. Why not?
Cool. So yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun.
Totally overwhelming, but a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, you should probably post some of those photos on the site. There are probably a bunch of people who'd like to see some of those. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah, you got some good stuff.
Yeah. So let's move on to Nintendo. Apparently the Switch is doing well. About 4.7 million units so far. Mm-hmm. Not bad for a company that doesn't understand how to keep things in stock.
But how many of those have been turned on?
It's 4.7 million sold and probably still waiting for to be resold. That's what we don't know. It seems to me like I don't know. Nintendo really needs to just get their supply chain in order. They need like a Tim Cook kind of guy to get that stuff sorted out. Because back in the
Over the recent weeks, they've been better, though. I was actually at Target, and I saw three there, and they were all the neon ones. So I was like, wait, this is the one that people want but don't have. So,
wait, people actually are going after that one?
Yeah. I guess because it's supposedly the rarer of the two. I'm like, fuck it, guys. Just play your Switch.
Yeah. Also, those Joy-Cons are fugly.
Yeah.
So we're putting that out there.
I actually prefer the yellow ones.
I'm happy with my black Joy-Cons.
You can get Joy-Con skins that make them look like NES controllers, if that's the thing you want to do. What should come as no surprise to anybody at this point is that the Switch is doing well. Nintendo was kind of due for a break, and now now that they've got the momentum going, they really need to do everything they can not to screw it up. Yep. And so far,
If their E3 was any indication, that's probably not likely.
Yeah, they need to put some work into that Switch software to basically bring it up to speed with pretty much everybody else.
Yeah.
Because it's still got issues. I have no idea why you would need a smartphone app to do voice chat. That makes no sense whatsoever. But, you know, it's these little things that just are irritants. You know, after a while, it's like death by a thousand cuts, you know?
Anyways. No, I don't think it's going to come to that necessarily. I just think they've got too much of an overall hit on their hands with this system. But some good PR would help them out for certain.
Some good PR and some better engineering is what would help. You know,
what jumps out to me is the fact that a game like ARMS sells a million copies, and I'm like, wait a minute, this game hasn't even been out for a month yet, and that game has sold how many? And a lot of us didn't even think much of it when it came out. probably still don't.
I still don't.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, you guys really have no reason to not come out with your more obscure titles. And unfortunately, I'm going to have to call F-Zero out as obscure. So, you know, come on.
I wouldn't even call it out as obscure. It's one of those, why the hell haven't you done this types of games?
Yeah.
If you want to go obscure, maybe. Then I would say Wave Race, which would be find a perfect home for itself on the Switch, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, and there isn't any other game like Wave Race on the Switch. I mean, for F-Zero, nope. you have Fast Racing. So you can kind of understand that, but a Wave Race would be perfect.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and there's, I don't know. They really need to get their act in order here. It's the Wii U evacuation project seems to be in full effect, so maybe once they get everything that they're going to get from that system onto the Switch, maybe they'll start looking at other things. But I do think they need to keep up with their unique new IPs because it seems to be working for them. So
yep.
Let's get that Captain Toad.
Yep. Yeah, Yoshi's Woolly World should probably be another one to bring to the Switch. So.
And Kirby's Epic Yarn, for that matter.
Yeah. So, yeah, bring all of those things over to the Switch. You have a nice quality library, and you have enough of a user base that they'll appreciate it. So, which is something the Switch never had. No, the Switch. I mean, the Wii U.
The Wii U.
Yeah. 15 million in 4 or 5 years. That's not a huge number. So.
And it took... It took longer for them to pass the Dreamcast in sales than the Dreamcast was on store shelves.
Yeah.
That's the damning one.
Yeah. Yep. So, anyways.
That's basically spelling it out. The only reason Nintendo survived that is because they had their Wii War Chest.
Yep. Basically. Because, they kind of dipped into that, and now they're building up a Switch War Chest. So... Because, they're selling it out of profit.
Oh, yeah.
Because, Anyways. So, we've heard about the NES Classic. Pretty much everybody wants one and can't get it, because I'm not paying hundreds of dollars for it.
Yeah.
Sega decided last year to get into it, and they contracted At Games to do a Sega Genesis Flashback HD.
Not the first time.
Not the first time. This is not the one that you have, but anyways. So the reviews, this unit is going to be coming out September 2nd. Early reviews are starting to come out, and boy, is it a clusterfuck.
Oh my god.
Has At Games ever gotten the Genesis sound chip right? Ever?
No, never. And apparently that continues here, although in this case it has other issues. This one has frame rate problems, which I don't understand how they.
How do you get frame rate problems on a?
you
it's a fourth gen system.
Yeah, well, apparently you emulate it with a 30-cent CPU. That's probably how you manage that.
Damn it!
So it's got issues. It has build quality issues. Apparently, the sound is. Well, inconsistent is what I would say. It's from what I've heard of it so far, it's nowhere near as bad as At Games' previous stuff, but it's still not great. There's like sometimes it will start crackling for no apparent reason, or while it jumps, the audio will start glitching out. It seems like the classic case of CPU bottlenecks or just bad software. And along those same lines, basically At Games kind of released a statement saying that, the early review units that we sent out had outdated software and aren't representative of the final units. I don't think I buy that. Why would you
say... It's representative of everything At Games has ever made, so...
Well, yeah, that's the problem, because, if in fact the final units are... actually better. Why would you send jank units to reviewers? This is your only chance to make a first impression, and you blow it by sending out units with faulty software or poor build quality or production run test units. doesn't seem like the greatest of moves, to be perfectly honest.
This is why gamers take the DIY approach to old school preservation.
Yeah.
Because the official stuff can't be trusted to be of the same quality.
Yeah. Well, my biggest question is, why is Sega continually contracting with AtGames? You'd think they'd have learned by now.
$80? Come on.
Yeah, $80.
I'm going to take a guess they work cheaply.
Probably.
I mentioned it before the podcast. I don't know if anybody listened to the Bombcast, but Peter Brown mentioned that in order to make the buttons work, you have to press them 3 times.
Like
upon boot up. Upon boot up of any game. So, you know, you turn your system off, you turn it on, and if you want a certain button to work, like the A button, you got to press A 3 times. And you got to do that for everything. Up, 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 left, 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 right, right, right. You know, it's ridiculous.
Wow, that sounds like really jank software. I mean, yeah, if it ships in that state, then what the hell? But, you know, I kind of want to give them the benefit of the doubt. I'm curious to see if maybe they are actually, you know, telling the truth here and that the final firmware that goes on them is at least passable. But, you know, they haven't had the best reputation.
It's not a good look.
Yeah, it's not a good look. And they don't have customer trust, especially for those people who have, you know, bought any of the AtGames stuff in the past.
I mean, Sega and AtGames have been doing this for years. Nintendo does one thing, and they do it right, except for this whole shipping thing. At least they still can't get it right. I'm like, oh, what's wrong here?
Yeah. And the really, like, irritating stuff is it just seems to be the... it seems to be just the Genesis that they can't get right. Because their Atari stuff and the ColecoVision stuff that they've done are actually quite good. So, I don't get it. Maybe they're just using the same system on a chip they use for those other two systems, and it's just not up to the task of doing the Genesis. So, oh well.
The worst part is, though, it's one of the best sound chips of all time. For a system that delivers sound that way. And that's the one they fuck up.
Yeah. So I'm going to keep an eye on this. I'm sure, you know, as AtGames has said that they're going to be sending out new units to IGN, CNET, GameSpot, Giant Bomb, etc. So we'll see if they're, you know, any better.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, you know, it would really suck for Sega if that's how they end up bringing it in. But anyway.
I mean, are these writers even going to bother reviewing it again? does it warrant an update? I don't know.
Well, I mean, if the changes are significant and make it significantly better, then yeah, it is worth looking at again. Because then, you know, your initial review is not valid anymore. Because it wouldn't be representative of what someone's actually going to buy.
But, I guess that's true.
Yeah. But anyways, so stay tuned. It's interesting as far as.
And then there are of course going to be other people who say no, those reviews should ride. They should be punished for what they shipped originally. But
yeah, but that's the thing. They might not be. not be what they ship. Yeah, it still hasn't. You know, it goes on sale the 2nd of September, so there's still another month for firmwares to get updated. Anyways. So we got a crap ton of Persona announcements.
Yes. I really wish Brandon was here for this segment, too, because I'd be interested in getting his reaction. But, a couple months ago, we talked about all of these... all of these domain names that Atlas went and bought for all kinds of Persona spinoffs. We've got three of them right here. Persona Q2 is coming to the 3DS, which will include Persona 5 characters this time. Mm-hmm. Not sure if the casts of 3 and 4 are going to be coming back for that one, but I can only imagine for what Persona Q is.
Yeah, that's kind of a core part of that story is... Oh, these two groups of people came together to solve whatever new mystery there was.
Yeah.
And Persona 3 and 5 are both getting dancing spin-offs like Persona 4 had, so.
And those are both forward, on PS4 and Vita, so.
Yep. Look forward to the soundtracks on those, by the way.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, though they, I wish they got a better name.
Yeah.
Dancing All Night was a great subtitle for that Persona 4 one. Mm-hmm. It's just like, hey, let's just Pokemon this name.
Let's call them the same thing. Persona 3, Dancing Moon Knight, and Persona 5, Dancing Night Star. Okay, cool.
Dancing Moon Knight. Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, though. Like, when Persona 4, Dancing All Night came out, it was definitely engaging. They were fun. Granted, after a week, I didn't play them anymore, but they were solid.
Well, it had a soundtrack that already lent itself well to a dancing game.
Yeah.
So that was the key, and 3 and 5 are no different.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do, especially.
I do think the format for these rhythm games were better for the DS than they are for the Vita, though. But, yeah. Mm. I'm just saying I want another Elite Beat Agents or Owen Don back.
Yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, they were trying to do the sort of new prop of the rapper kind of game.
Hmm.
And that didn't go anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. As you pointed out here in the notes, it kind of makes you wonder if Persona 3 is going to get a PS4 release with.
Yeah. I mean, if they're going to give Persona 3 the dancing treatment, I don't see why Persona 3 can't be brought back in any shape or form. Granted, we have Portable, but that was on PSP. That was years ago.
One also didn't include the answer from Fess.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So, there's fertile ground for a definitive edition of Persona 3.
So, Persona 4 Golden was pretty solid, so they don't really have to do that anymore. 3 would be ideal. 3 would be, with 3 with trophies would be solid.
Yeah. Yeah, let's keep an eye on that, because there's definitely possibilities there, and it looks like...
Clearly not done with Persona 3.
Oh, no. Well, Persona 3 was one of the more iconic games in the series, so...
Yes. Well, it's pretty much the game that was responsible for the entire identity that the series has today.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you want to keep it going, well, chances are bringing it to the PS4 would be a very good idea. So,
yes. Yeah. Count me in.
Yep. So let's go to some JRPG news. We got a release date for Lost Sphere, January 23rd, 2018. Yeah, North America and Europe.
So, I'm there.
This is a very... Well, what can I say about this? This is a very positive thing for Tokyo RPG Factory. It shows that they're making games quickly. They're not seemingly subject to all kinds of delays. They're not putting huge budgets into it, but they're relying more on art direction and composition to carry the games rather than big budget or voice acting and all that kind of stuff.
What a concept.
Yeah, this seems to be exactly the kind of studio that we want from Square Enix, and I'm glad they're continuing to support them.
I'm glad that Yosuke Matsuda has all the confidence in them that he has. But it is kind of his baby.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a quick turnaround time, because, I mean, I Am Setsuna was 2015. This will be, 2018, so 3 years. It's, for a JRPG of a substantial length, that's not an unreasonable amount of time.
Yep.
Yeah. They actually had the Switch version over at Comic-Con, and it was pretty solid. I mean, yeah, I can't really judge an RPG off of a 15-minute demo, but from what I played, it was pretty much what I wanted from I Am Setsuna. You know, the music is more varied. You actually have places that don't have snow. So, yeah, everything that I want it to be is so far there, and it's going to come out with a physical version, so why not?
This is the
good version of Square Enix. Yeah. I'm just going to call it like it is.
Yeah.
And it's on the Switch. That's perfect.
Yeah. Well, I think it's going to be on multi-platform eventually.
It'll be on all.
It is. But the fact that it's on the Switch makes it perfect.
Yeah. So, yeah, January is, it's shaping up to be pretty stacked as far as games go, especially JRPGs. We got a lot coming out that month.
Yeah. It's a good time of year for JRPGs. You're just staying in the house, because fuck going outside in that.
Yeah. Middle of winter.
You want something nice and relaxing to pass the time with, and we're getting some good options.
Yeah, so let's keep going that. So we mentioned, I think last week or the week before, that Dragon Quest XI was coming to North America in 2018, but now we also got word the Dragon Quest Builders 2 is PS4 and Switch bound.
Makes sense.
Interesting. Yeah, I was never about the builder life, but why not?
Yeah, it's not my sort of thing, but what the heck. I'm pretty sure Lee... Actually, I know that Lee actually did enjoy Dragon Quest Builders with his son, so...
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
More Dragon Quest is never a bad thing as far as I see it.
Yep. And Japan is getting more Dragon Quest, doing re-releases of Dragon Quest 1, 2, 3 for PS4 and 3DS. And that's coming, this month. So.
One is... roughly $5, two is roughly $8, and three is roughly $15 from what I gathered. So I think fair prices across the board. Hopefully they find their way over here because backward compatibility on the 3DS does not take you as far back as the Game Boy Color versions of Dragon Quest 1, 2, and 3. So... those games definitely need refreshed in the modern console library, as it were.
Yep.
And this would be a great way to do it.
Yep. I hope they bring them over here.
Yeah, they've not done a great job with those first six Dragon Quests, bringing them over here. I know 4, 5, and 6, I think, are on DS, but they're still kind of hard to get, at least for a decent price. And stuff that should be on more modern platforms. Exploiting it at least as much as the other half of Square Enix is doing with Final Fantasy.
Right. Yeah.
We've got 10 and 12 on PS4 and Vita. And 7's also on there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it would really surprise me if these three didn't show up in North America at some point.
Yeah.
It's a matter of what form they take, whether they're going to actually do a full remaster or just release them as Dragon Warrior 1, 2, 3, because those are the ones we already knew of. But, yeah.
I think they're going to have the Dragon Quest name on them when it happens.
Yeah, change the title screen wouldn't be hard.
Yeah, I think in irony, they probably don't have the rights to the Dragon Warrior name anymore.
Nope. They'd have to release them as Dragon Quest, which I guess would be fine.
It's good uniformity. Confusion. It's healthy.
Yeah, I'm serious. They really ought to do is just do a massive Dragon Quest anthology.
Oh my god!
Things in one.
And then nationwide productivity would go down.
Yeah, well, Japan would sink into the sea if that happened. So, yeah. Anyways.
Oh, that is a lot of gaming all at once.
Yeah, Dragon Quest 1 through 9 all at once.
Yikes.
Yeah. Good luck with that. Anyways. I've got news from THQ Nordic. They're teasing two new titles. One, a new IP, post-apocalyptic open world funness.
That's probably Elex.
No.
But that's already announced.
Yeah. This one's mentioned as a Kung Fu Fable game. Not Microsoft Fable, but as in a story.
Yeah.
Fable.
So that's a weird thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they just throwing around buzzwords as they wish to, or...?
It seems that way, because the other one is a new installment of a horrifying series or something. I was reading in this article, I'm like, wow, really? You guys... okay. I can speculate. I mean, we can all speculate on the kind of stuff that they might be bringing back. Darksiders?
Yeah. Well, I think that's the obvious.
They're already doing that.
One. Yeah, they're already doing that.
Yeah, they've already announced that one, so it's not going to be that. But...
it's some obscure THQ IP that nobody remembers anymore.
Well, let's see. It could be Painkiller. That's what that one was speculated. Could be... Oh, God, I hope it's Titan Quest, because that would be awesome. I've been playing a bit of the Anniversary Edition, and yeah, that's pretty good. They've been doing a lot of updates to that game, making it not quite so horrendously unbalanced. So, I wouldn't mind a Titan Quest 2, but we won't know until they actually announce it.
SpongeBob SquarePants.
Does THQ Nordic have that IP? I don't.
I don't know about Nordic.
I don't think they went to the trouble of picking that up.
I don't think anybody has that anymore.
Yeah. Good. That's one less thing to worry about, I suppose. Yeah. Anyway. So we got a couple of stories here about developers swapping around. This one is related to Bloodstained. Inti Creates is no longer working on the project, and Artplay is. Apparently this happened right after E3.
Interesting. I'm not sure what to make of this news, but what is going on over at Inti Creates?
I have no idea. It seems to me like, well, Inti Creates is still working on the spin-off project, so I don't know what's going on there. Maybe they were taken off the main project just so they could focus on stuff, or maybe they have other projects that they want to work on instead of Bloodstained. I don't know.
Just combined with everything, it seems really weird.
Yeah. It does seem kind of odd, but, you know, from what we've been seeing of the game still, it doesn't seem like the change of developers has actually, like, hurt it in any way, so...
Oh, no, not at all.
It seems like it was a seamless enough handoff. It's just strange as to why they would do that.
It seems like Inti Create's stock is going down for some reason that we don't know about yet, but
there's something going on in Japan.
Yeah.
And... Yeah.
This is weird.
Yep. And then there's a kind of a similar story about Playdeck, because they're no longer on Unsung Story, and instead another studio, Little Orbit, is going to be rebooting that whole game.
Yeah, that's a whole big thing, because that was a big Kickstarter. It had $660,000 pledged to it, and Playdeck kind of went silent on it. Eventually said they are balking at it, and gave it to Little Orbit, who has made a lot of licensed games, like a lot of like Adventure Time and Kung Fu Panda and some other games like that. But yeah, they basically said in their own statements, first the bad news, Little Orbit is starting from scratch. We spent hours going through the Kickstarter comments and researching all of the project materials. I feel the backers have made one thing clear. We need to focus on the original single-player campaign, and Matsuno's design was promoted during the campaign. So yeah, that was supposed to be like a turn-based strategy RPG, kind of in the vein of Final Fantasy Tactics campaign and all that. And at some point, Playdeck decided, this needs to be a multiplayer game.
Ugh.
And a lot of comments like, I didn't pay for a multiplayer game. I don't like PvP, at least for this. And it's like, they just kept pushing forward. And it's like, what the hell is going on here? So this seems like at least the best outcome, because those people are no longer attached to it.
Yeah.
You got a new studio that's at least wants to take on this thing. They're going to honor all the Kickstarter rewards that have been pledged and try to do exactly what the people wanted.
Cool.
Which, it sucks for the backers because now they have another long delay ahead of them.
And,
but at the end of it, they might actually get the game they paid for. So.
Yeah. And they have a studio that actually wants to provide the thing that they paid for.
Yeah. So that's even better.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you got to be careful with these Kickstarter things. You never know what you're going to end up with. I'm still waiting for Bloodstain. Just point that out there. Still not out yet. Anyways. What do we have here? Well, the Yakuza Studio is apparently going to be announcing a new game August 26th. Well, 28th, sorry. No,
I had 26th.
26th. So they're pre-announcing an announcement.
Yeah, well, they've pre-announced it as well because they've already said that they're working on a Switch game.
Hmm.
That was a few months ago. And their lead developer showed up basically as the main character, if you will, of that amazing Sega rebranding trailer that they did. So it makes me wonder if this is all... if all of these different things are pointing in the same direction, if this is the Switch game and the amazing Sega kickoff and, you know, so on and so forth. I don't know. It's if it's not, then they're a really busy studio.
Yeah, well, isn't this, you know, wasn't this Aki at one point?
I don't think so, but I could be wrong on that. If it is, then it's a part of their history that I was not aware of. But I'm not at all saying that that couldn't be the case.
Yep. Because, yeah, if it if this is, you know, what's left of Aki, they have a history of some games that they haven't gone back to in a long, long time.
Yeah, a whole catalog of them, really. Yeah.
Whole genre, even. You know, Aki did some of the best wrestling games out there.
Yep, it's true.
Imagine, you know, it's like, I'll put out, okay, this will be kind of strange, but imagine a New Japan Pro Wrestling game for the Switch.
Well, shit, they're ready for a new licensing deal, aren't they?
Uh-huh. Just saying. I mean,
yeah, that would... no, I'm saying that would fit.
Yep.
Like, if this is the studio that... that made those back in the day, then absolutely.
Yeah.
And it would be right at home on the Switch.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like, yeah. It's like we know that a Yakuza 2 remake is definitely going to happen, but it doesn't need to happen right away.
No.
Yeah, they could take.
And it seems like they want to start working on other franchises again too.
Yeah. So yeah, if this is where they want to go, yeah, I'm up for it.
It doesn't quite fit the whole amazing Sega motif, though. Because, I mean, the focal point of that was that they'd been seriously pondering the company's identity and its place within Japanese popular culture. While you could say that those games were absolutely a part of that, there was nothing intrinsically Sega about it. And so that's kind of what gives me some pause to think that might be the reveal. I don't know, though.
It's definitely something to keep an eye out. It might end up being one of those zero update moments that we go back to.
It's like E3 2015.
Yeah, everybody's looking for Yakuza 2 remake, and here we are talking about New Japan.
I'm thinking it's going to be a new IP entirely.
Yeah, it could be.
From what I can see, Aki did not make any... is not the Yakuza studio. They worked on a PSP Yakuza game, but otherwise they've been working on Style Savvy.
Oh, that one, yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, they released all three of those, and a series called Pretty Rhythm, which is anime as hell. Okay, it is from a manga anime, so
yeah,
that explains that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, screw that then. Oh well. Anyways. Yeah, NBA Live 18 is coming back, and the NBA, the WNBA, is going to be represented for the first time in a game as a result.
But does it play any damn good this year?
That's the big question, isn't it? It's all well and good if you have the WNBA in there, but if the game sucks to begin with, don't know that that really helps you any.
Yeah, it'll at least sell some more copies to female gamers, so.
Yeah, well, I'm just glad they're going to...
Even if females don't watch WNBA.
Okay.
I remember at E3, like they have the Staples Center right next to it. You can actually watch a WNBA game. I was at the bar across the street. It was televised, and there were like maybe 9 people in the stands all wearing E3 badges. So, I don't know.
So, yeah. Anyways. Got a Madden 18 trade-in deal, which is strange.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. They've actually been doing this for the last 3 years, and this has been the reason why I don't... trade in my copy of Madden until I absolutely have to. So basically, if you still have your copy of Madden 17 and you want to trade up, if you do it at Best Buy between now and the 19th, they'll give you a $15 Best Buy gift card as well as a $10 coupon to use toward Madden 18. So it'll be 10 bucks off no matter what. So that brings your $59.99 down to $49.99. And then the gift card, you can use on whatever you want. Should you use it towards Madden? Boom, that's $25 off. And if you're a Gamer Club Unlocked member, that $59.99 would then be $47.99. And you're looking at around $23 plus tax for a new sports game, which never happens. So it's a good deal. Madden, I'm actually looking forward to this year because of their they're doing a story mode. Granted, a lot of these suck, but, you know, I'm somewhat interested.
Anyways.
It's being done by a studio that clearly wants to do it.
Yeah.
That can make all the difference.
Yep.
They want to do it. They think they've got ideas on how to make it work. And, hey, I'm not going to begrudge them that. I will say Best Buy's GCU is looking like a really good thing to be getting in on.
Yes.
You're going to be buying games.
30 bucks for 2 years is solid.
$30 for 2 years, that's pretty good.
Yep.
Considering pays for itself very quickly.
Yeah, it pays for itself in 2 games, basically, if you're going to be buying new games.
They also stack with whatever promotions they have, so if you're they're doing a buy two, get one free sale, you stack with that. That's some good savings there.
Yeah.
Which then leads them to disabling it for Black Friday. Because they realize, oh, that's too good of a deal.
Although, they had the same deals as Cyber Monday, which still worked. So I was like, okay.
Yeah. You just wait 3 days and then you get it. Yeah. Who wants to go anywhere Black Friday anyway?
So, not me.
No. You don't have to anymore. So that's a great thing.
I spent Black Friday behind a computer at a desk, moving information around and making the occasional phone call. I was completely okay with that.
Yep. So in other sports news, NBA 2K18 is going to be releasing digitally on the Switch alongside the other console versions, but physically at retail is going to be later.
That's weird.
Yeah. I don't get that. Unless, of course, there's, you know, production constraints that we don't know about yet.
Possibility.
Because, this coming out, well, right at the beginning of the holiday season, isn't it?
Yeah. September 19th.
It's weird that they've announced that for NBA now, but as for like WWE, we don't even know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure that game is coming out. We just don't know what's going on there. I actually do think that Nintendo Switch cartridge production is probably a little bit more controlled than disc production is. So that may have something to do with it. Also, given the games that Nintendo's got coming out this year, I think they might put a little bit more production capacity behind those.
If we have to cancel or delay physical production of NBA 2K18 to make sure that all those cartridges end up being Super Mario Odyssey, that's probably good for Nintendo.
That's probably obviously very good for Nintendo. Kind of sucks a little bit for 2K, although, well, I don't know. Does it really?
Yeah, because this is one of the top-selling games every year.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of money third-party-wise that Nintendo's missing out on.
Yeah,
but I wonder what
percentage of those people that buy NBA games every year is digital and not physical.
Probably a decent amount, but I would imagine physical. Because if you follow like the NPD top 10, like throughout the rest of the year and following into the following year, that game just sticks in there in the top 10.
Yeah, it seems to always be there.
Like people don't realize, oh, you've missed most of the season. Probably shouldn't be buying the new game at full price or whatever it is. You know, wait a few more months and get the next one or whatever. But people still buy it, like Call of Duty and some of the other games like that.
Yeah.
And, I wouldn't want to buy an annualized release digital. I mean, I wouldn't want to begin with, but an annualized release digital, I mean, that means you get no return.
Yeah, you really don't. But
well, you're getting no return anyway because they do not hold their value for shit.
Well, they don't, but if you trade it in early enough, there's still some there. And then if you have deals like we did with Madden, there's something there as well. Yeah. Whereas if you buy a digital, you can't return it for shit.
Yeah. And we don't know about the length of the delay in to get to retail.
No, it's could just be listed as fall 2017.
Yeah, you know. So keep an eye on that. Anyways. So a summer event returning to Overwatch starting Tuesday.
Tuesday. And they're bringing back Lucio Ball with a competitive version, which is great. Just add all the obnoxious people on top of that. So,
lots of fun stuff going on in Overwatch that makes
They changed it up a little bit. Like if you're near the goal, you can't just knock someone out of the fucking way. So that definitely helps. They've also made the old Summer Games skins as affordable as the normal ones. So it's only the new ones that'll have the premium prices.
Yeah.
And they've also added the algorithm to make duplicates happen less. So that'll help.
Yeah.
Yeah, the old cosmetics are about a third of the price, so legendaries are about 1,000 credits instead of 3,000, that sort of stuff.
Yep.
The ultimate on Lucio in that Lucio ball has been changed. Before, it kind of dragged the ball sort of magnetically, so you would usually have somebody just run into the goal when they have an ultimate, wait for the ball to come nearby, and they activate it and it pulls it in.
Yeah.
This time, it just enhances Lucio's skills. So he just comes like a super Lucio instead of being that kind of like game-breaking thing. And then I hope they don't have the same bug that was in last year's thing, where if people just randomly got to pick a regular hero so they could actually shoot everybody else while they're playing.
Which didn't really help too much
their chances of winning, but they got to be
Lucio,
annoying.
Lucio, 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 Bastion. Oh, no.
Yeah. So, okay. So, enjoy that. Got some Harmonix news. They've announced a season pass, basically, for the next 8 weeks in their Rivals Spotlight. Basically, any of the songs that get spotlighted, you'll get if you purchase the season pass for $13.50.
Yeah.
That ain't bad.
8 songs, that's typically the normal price for an 8 song pack. It's just we don't know what's in the pack.
Yeah, you don't know what the songs are. It's like, you buy them and say, if you're into the Rivals mode and kind of want to have everything, then, this makes sense because there's no discount.
Yeah.
You just get them, delivered to you, so that's at least convenient.
And I imagine it will probably be better songs than just like, oh, here's songs by people you've never heard of.
Hopefully.
I would imagine, because it's all new stuff.
Yeah, you said that. It's stuff not like, that hasn't been released yet. So
Yeah.
You're not going to be, paying $14 for stuff that's already on the store.
It's finding out, it's Journey.
I already have this. So,
I might get this. That. I don't know. The first one's available on the 24th, August 24th, and last one is October 17th.
And this is, of course, in addition to the regular DLC releases that they do every week.
Yeah. So
keep that in mind. What do we got here? Well, yeah, Rock Band Blitz going to be delisted the 28th of August. So, yeah, if you don't have Rock Band Blitz yet and you want it and you want the free songs for Rock Band 3/4, no, actually, you can't even do that anymore. So, yeah, never mind. Don't get that. So, yeah, so if you just want to play Rock Band Blitz, go ahead and get it. But otherwise, yeah, don't bother. It's going away in a couple of weeks.
Well, you can bring it over to Rock Band 4.
Is this a licensing thing?
Yeah, I thought that the licensing from Blitz actually expired.
You can't. No, it says right here in the Harmonix delisting announcement. All 25 songs and soundtrack can be brought over to Rock Band 4 at no additional charge.
Hurry up and do it if you want to do it.
Because it's, I think, $10, $15 for 25 songs. Yeah, that's a really good price.
Yeah.
There's some decent songs in there, too.
Yeah.
And Kelly Clarkson. But there's also Quiet Riot.
So. Yeah. They've also confirmed it's not going to be backwards compatible. This is it.
Yeah. They're not going to be playing that anytime soon anymore. So we got some beta news. The Dragon Ball FighterZ beta has been delayed to August. Later in August, actually. 22nd, I think? Yeah, the sign-up has been moved to the 22nd of August.
Yeah, so. Kind of goes with the territory. I'm not sure what exactly happened that held the beta up, but it did seem like they were getting ready to throw it down pretty quickly compared to where the information surrounding the game was at.
Yeah.
So
it's kind
I'm not really surprised.
Yeah, there's still a long way for this game to get to release. So, I mean, if the beta gets delayed a few weeks, that's not going to be a huge deal. Still, it's a little annoying for people who were looking forward to it. Like,
so. Yeah.
But anyways.
Well, we may have had a character leak.
Yeah.
Because Chuck Huber, good voice actor, good guy, I've actually met him, made comments this week that he was doing some voice work on Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Hmm.
Chuck Huber is the voice of Android 17.
that would be pretty good to have in there.
So, yeah. And finally we're getting a character from a little bit off the board that you wouldn't necessarily think of as outright obligatory for a game like this.
Yeah.
Gives me some good hope for this roster. Because let's be honest, this could be terrible. But if they...
Yeah, well, we've had no shortage of very terrible Dragon Ball fighting games.
Yeah.
We do not need another one of those.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that we get a really diverse roster.
Yeah, we should.
Android 17 would help that.
Yeah. We've also got, you know, the team that's behind this game is more than talented enough to pull it off.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Don't worry too much about that. You can, however, sign up for the Dissidia beta. Now, that's still going on. So,
yep.
Yeah,
haven't gotten any codes yet, but...
No, they haven't gone out yet, so... Yeah. That's unfortunate, but...
Yeah, if I get in on this beta, that's probably going to be dominating my gaming time for the foreseeable.
Yeah. And streaming time, provided it's not under NDA.
Oh, I'm sure it will be.
Yeah. So... Yeah, and finally, we'll move to the last story of the day, which is Capcom is apparently going to be supporting Switch with more games, thanks to the success of Ultra Street Fighter 2, which kind of contradicts the story we saw a little while ago, where they said they weren't.
They were on the fence about Switch support, despite Ultra Street Fighter 2's success. If it's the latter, or if it's the former, and they're actually getting on board with the Switch, so much the better, because I think there's really good potential for a home for Capcom on the Switch. But Interesting to see how that actually manifests itself, what franchises they go to.
Yeah, well, we know about one of them right now, which is Resident Evil 1 and 2, going to Switch, late 2017.
It's Revelations 1 and 2.
Revelations 1 and 2?
Yeah.
No. Oh, so they aren't playing it completely safe.
Yeah, those are interesting ones to bring up. You know, guaranteed sellers would have been 1 and 2, at least the remakes of those.
I think those are coming.
To Switch. Yeah.
Because if they're already putting remasters of these Resident Evil games up there, there's going to be more. Yeah. There's a long train of Resident Evil remasters coming.
Well, I think they're required by law to do those.
And so I got 4, 5, and 6, and Code Veronica, and Resident Evil 1 HD, and 0. Then we eventually get 2, and they'll probably remaster or remake 3.
Hmm. Yeah, 3 needed, 3 could use a little bit of work.
So. Just do them all.
Well, I'm pretty sure they will.
What else to do?
I get the sense Capcom, you know, after the release of Ultra Street Fighter 2, they were on the fence, and now they've fallen off the fence.
Yeah. Like, all right, here's our money train.
Yep. Yeah, they hit their head on the giant pile of money that they can get by supporting the Switch. So that's what I'm guessing happened.
Yeah.
So, question is, what else did they bring over?
Every Mega Man, Final Fight, Phoenix Wright.
Yeah, they got a lot of stuff that would be well suited to the Switch. Beautiful.
Imagine
Joe
the two Mega Man legacy collections on one cartridge.
Yeah.
Or just digital. That's fine, too.
Yeah, they'd probably sell those separately, because that would make more money.
Yep.
Obviously, they can't bring over Street Fighter V, because that's tied up with Sony.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't see that. You're not going to see Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite on the Switch. Well, actually, you probably could.
Ooh.
It looks bad enough.
This thing is not bringing PS4s and Xbox Ones to their knees. I'll tell you that right now.
PNO3, Dead Phoenix, Killer7.
Pretty much the GameCube stuff.
Yeah, all of the GameCube stuff.
Monster Hunter, I think, is a given.
Yeah. How about a new Auto Modelista?
Who would work on it at this point?
I don't know. I think everybody who did work on that game have left at this point. So, oh well.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm opposed to it. I'm just saying I don't know who the team would be.
Yeah. You would have to put somebody on it, but don't think that's... Yeah. Hey, it's wishful thinking. What can I say?
Yeah. That can be healthy.
Yeah. I just like seeing... No, I actually wouldn't mind having that as a PS2 game to be downloadable or something. Just
put it on PS4 with trophies.
Yeah. Let's do that with widescreen.
Yeah.
Fun. Yeah. So I think we'll call it there for this week. Lots of stuff to talk that we had to talk about. And, more changes will be coming to the show as time goes by.
Yep.
Also, guests. We're working on stuff. Can't really say who or when, but stuff's going to happen.
We're reaching out.
We'd love to say who, but again, stuff happens.
Yeah. Yep, stuff happens, and you never know. So with that, I am Filippo D'Adolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Dan Red Victorio.
And we'll see you all next week.